really feel that VR training is core to achieving that moonshot goal in order for officers to choose alternatives to guns, like the Taser energy weapon. They need to feel confident and well-trained on that weapon, and that's where VR training comes in.
Welcome back to the XR Industry Leaders Podcast with Arbor XR. I'm your host, Brad Scoggin, CEO and co-founder of Arbor XR, along with my co-host, Will Stackable, our CMO and also a co-founder. And today we get to sit down with Axon. Axon is a public company and a global leader in public safety, and specifically with T. Liu, the VP and GM of VR training at Axon. T, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Brad. Great to be here with you and Will.
Well, let's just jump right into it with maybe tell us a little bit about your background and your role at Axon.
Sure. I've been working in technology for over 20 years, and currently I am the lead of our Axon VR training team, both the product and the business. So my team includes product managers, designers, engineers, all the folks that are building our virtual reality training.
Well, and a lot of folks probably don't know this, but Axon has one of the largest, I think most impressive VR deployments in the world. So tell us how VR kind of fits into Axon's mission. Maybe start with the mission of Axon and how VR fits into that.
Sure. Axon's mission really is to protect life and be a leader in public safety technology. We have a moonshot goal to reduce gun-related deaths between police and the public by 50% over the next 10 years. We are the maker of the Taser less lethal energy weapon, body-worn cameras, digital evidence management. So we have a whole ecosystem of hardware and software products targeted towards public safety. And we really feel that VR training is core to achieving that moonshot goal in order for officers to choose alternatives to guns, like the Taser energy weapon. They need to feel confident and well-trained on that weapon. And that's where VR training comes in.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the benefits of training or learning in VR. And we always talk about things that are difficult, dangerous, or expensive. And your use case to me is kind of like the poster child for the difficult, dangerous part of VR training. What was it for you? What was that initial core problem that you said, we want to try to solve this, and we think VR is how to do it?
Yeah, I think the main problem is just there's not enough time and resources for agencies to train. A lot of them are understaffed. They don't have a lot of trainers. It's expensive for them to pull officers out of the field and bring them to a centralized training facility. So one of the benefits of our VR solution is it's highly portable and scalable. So you can run it at a centralized training facility, or you can deploy it out at precincts. And being able to give officers more access to training, the hope is that they can train more frequently. Oftentimes with their Taser energy weapons, for example, they will do an initial certification and just an annual certification. But we don't believe that's sufficient training. And we'd love them to be training more so they can feel more confident in the field and dealing with the variety of scenarios that they have to face every day.
So I know that Axon is now deploying this technology in thousands of orgs across, globally. How did the program start? What was the initial use case? And what are the use cases now for VR?
Yeah, so Axon's been in VR since 2019. And so our leadership has been a big believer in the benefits of immersive training. Initially, the first use case was what we call community engagement training. That's more 360-degree video that's trying to train officers to handle a variety of situations ranging from mental health, drug overdose, community members with disabilities. And so that's where we started. And that training is really trying to help officers build empathy and engagement for different types of situations that they have to face in the field. Over time, our portfolio has evolved and expanded. So today we still have that community engagement training. We also have what we call simulator training, and that's more rendered in CGI. That's for officers to train on both Taser energy weapons as well as different use of force scenarios that they may encounter in the field. So for our Taser energy weapons, again, we think there's benefit in doing high repetition muscle memory type training. We've invested in creating our own custom VR controllers that look like the true to life Taser energy weapons and work exactly the same, because we really feel it's important for them to, you know, train with the true to life weapon as much as possible. That's how they'll build confidence in using that weapon in the field. So that training is, again, focused more on fundamentals, high repetition type training. And that's something that's hard for them to do because they don't get practice with their Taser energy weapons as much today as they do with their firearms. So with VR, we're trying to, again, drive that confidence in being able to deploy that weapon effectively. And then we have what we call use of force training scenarios. So those are scenarios where they mimic calls that officers may face in the field, and they have to practice things like, you know, what type of scenarios they should use and what force they should use in those scenarios, how to transition potentially from different weapon types. So we have sort of a wide range of training applications today that officers are using.
Yeah, I think a lot about just the pressure that a police officer is under in a situation, right? They walk up to a situation, or they walk up to a car, and anything, they have to be ready for anything, like literally anything. And the cost of a mistake is pretty high. And to me, it's so cool that you could put an officer in a VR training simulation again and again and again and again, and they can either improve, or you can maybe even determine, hey, some people just don't have what it takes to handle that kind of stress, which is just so cool. And I think that there are some of those applications. There's some YouTube videos we could probably put in the show notes that kind of show some of the simulations, which would be cool. Will, we should do that if we can.
Yeah. And again, I think there's a lot of different types of training that officers do, right? So there's new recruit training. Those are people brand new to policing. And again, they may have never dealt with somebody who has, you know, is having a mental health crisis. And so that's where that type of training comes in. Again, just helping them initially learn how to use their energy weapon or deal with different threat situations, right? So there's that type of training. There's also, once you become a police officer, you know, they do annual certification training. And so VR gets used at the annual certifications. And what we really want to do is drive agencies to do more frequent micro trainings, because we feel like the smaller trainings lead to better retention. So instead of just doing, I think we all, you know, probably have our corporate annual trainings that we have to do every year, right? But you don't really retain that information very well. And so what we really want to do is really democratize training and make it more accessible so that officers can train more often. Maybe they have 10 minutes at the beginning of their shift and they can, you know, pop into headset and just refresh some skills. That's ultimately where we want to get to. We have some agencies that are doing that today, but, you know, we're working to try to help them scale out those programs.
I'd love to hear, can you just give me a day in the life? I'm a new recruit, or let's say I'm an officer and then I want to do a micro training. I walk into the office. What does the process look like, and how do I actually get into this training?
Yeah. New recruits, it's a little bit different. So new recruits usually will go to some sort of academy, right, for 6 months. And so they're basically learning the basics of how to be a police officer. That is more centralized training. So a lot of state academies run police training academies for all new recruits for all the agencies in that state. So for example, I live in Seattle, Washington State has a training academy. If you want to be a new police officer, even for Seattle Police Department, you go to the state training academy. And in that training academy, that's where you may encounter some of our community engagement training. You're getting certified on your initial TASER certification. That is more trainer led right now. So there are trainers that are, you know, running classrooms, having people put on headsets and practice their skills. So that's sort of happening at the academy level. Once you pass the academy, oftentimes you will go out into the field, and agencies will pair you with a more experienced officer, usually for your first year. That experienced officer, they often refer to like as an FTO, a field training officer. That's just a more seasoned police officer that you're partnered with, and they will have you, you know, helping to engage on different types of calls. but that's when you're at your precinct. And so we have some customers. I'll use Joliet PD, for example. They're a large police department in Illinois. And so they've deployed VR headsets at some of their departments, and they're having officers go in monthly. And so, again, if they have time at the beginning of the shift, they do have sort of like a VR trainer facilitator at that agency, because as we probably all know, you know, VR is still not as easy to get in and use as opening an app on your phone. And I think that is one of the challenges to scaling. We're trying to make that easier, but that an officer, you know, in Joliet PD could be doing training monthly because they have a, you know, an administrator at their precinct who is familiar with how to set up VR, get them in headset, and direct them to different types of trainings.
That's great. You mentioned, you know, training in VR is great for things that are difficult, dangerous, or expensive to simulate in real life. And you mentioned the scenario of an officer encountering somebody with mental health issues. What other types of scenarios do you feel like lend themselves to VR in a unique way that you can't do easily with traditional training?
I mean, there's so many. Just think about all the different scenarios that police and officers encounter every day: mental health, you know, domestic violence issues, community members that have certain disabilities like Alzheimer's or hard of hearing, or they don't speak, you know, English as their first language. So we have a wide variety of those types of scenarios. We also have done some interactive case law scenarios, which is interesting. So, you know, case law is where, you know, certain jurisdictions will issue, you know, cases on here's where it's an appropriate use of force and not. And so typically in the past, you know, officers would sit through PowerPoint presentations, you know, just to try to understand, hey, this case law is saying this is what you can or should not be doing. And so now we started to take some of those sort of marquee cases and create interactive training scenarios around them. So that's another interesting use case. But again, even all of the different, you know, use of force scenarios that we have, these are, again, scenarios that officers can encounter all the time. And a lot of agencies, you know, most of their training today, it's similar to you sit in a classroom, you have an instructor, they're going through a PowerPoint. They obviously still do very hands-on, like defensive tactics scenarios. VR is not going to replace that. But they also run what they call sort of RBTs, reality-based trainings. And so sometimes they will have other officers, you know, be the actors, or with even with taser training, they will practice deploying on a static two-dimensional target, but they'll also do some drills where some of the officers are dressed up in these puffy suits. We call them halt suits because, you know, if they're actually getting a training cartridge fired at them, they need protection, right? And so, but when they're doing those, you know, they're not super realistic. Those, the trainers dressed up in the halt suits, they're not moving very quickly. And so it's been really interesting to hear from our customers that some of the training that we do in VR is actually training that they haven't really done in the past.
Interesting.
So a great example is, we have an exercise in VR called moving targets. And it's for, you know, it seems pretty simple on the surface. It's you practicing deploying your taser energy weapon at targets that are moving. They can be running away from you, running towards you, you know, running across the screen. And, you know, we thought that's a pretty foundational skill, because when you do see tasers being used in the field, often, you know, the subjects, they're not just standing there, right? They're moving. But a lot of our customers said, we've actually never practiced deploying tasers on moving targets, because we practice on these two-dimensional targets, or we do practice against, again, trainers in these halt suits, but they're not moving very fast. And so that was sort of eye-opening for us, is just, you know, VR can easily create scenarios that they really don't get to practice on in the real world, just because it's difficult for them to do and it's resource intensive.
Yeah. And you make a great point that, and I think sometimes there's this misnomer that because VR is so exciting, so powerful, that it's going to replace all your training. And really, like, that's not how it works, right? Like, at its best, it's a very powerful augment to certain scenarios. I think that's a great example. How else do you get to practice on a moving target, and again and again and again, and you're not wasting taser cartridges or whatever, however that works out, right? Like, and you can, yeah. So that's, I'm very curious. You touched on this briefly a minute ago. You're at such scale. You have so many officers going through this training, and you talked about some of like a little bit of the logistics of having someone on site to help get people set up. But like, what has the response been from the officers? Are they resistant? Are they excited about it? Like, how has that played out? I think sometimes we've seen the people side of the change management is the hardest part. Everyone thinks it's the tech side and that's, there's challenges, but then you get to the people and that, you know, sometimes it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, that's definitely the case here. I think, you know, change is hard for people, right? And this is still a relatively new technology. And there's a wide mix. I will say, you know, sometimes there's skepticism from older, more experienced officers, right? Like, how effective really is this training? And we often hear a lot that from our trainers that even people that are initially, you know, a little bit skeptical of VR, once they get in it, they really do get immersed and they really see the benefit of it. And so I think the reception from the trainees has been really positive. Some of our agencies even use some of our VR in recruiting events. So when they're trying to do events to recruit new police officers, they will have VR headsets there to actually show, especially newer, younger officers who are more tech savvy. You know, some of them have obviously played a lot of video games, or maybe they've have their own VR headsets. So they even use that to help recruit new officers to show them, hey, our agency is leaning into new technology. We actually use VR for training. So I think, you know, some of the newer officers, I think, get excited about using VR for training. And we've also won over, I think, some of the more skeptical officers too, because once they get in headset, they really do see the value and they can see how, you know, doing the training makes them more prepared and more confident.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I could see as a new recruit, I try to put myself in their shoes, like, hey, it's an exciting profession, but it's also a scary profession. And to feel like I'm going to be better prepared, you know, there is the fun component of doing training in VR, but like the practical side of I'm going to enter this profession and be better prepared. It's funny, you talk about, you know, the more experienced officers having some resistance. A funny story, one of our customers is Delta Airlines, and they do training in the ramp activities, everything that happens around the plane. And they had an older gentleman who was very resistant. I've been doing this for 40 years, and he went through the VR training, and he came out and said, you know what? There is a hose that I have been stepping over for 40 years that I am not supposed to step over. And I did not know I was not supposed to step over that hose until I did the VR training. And now every time I walk around the plane, I see the image from the VR of I'm not supposed to step over the hose. And it is, and it even at that, you know, at with that much, muscle memory was able to adjust behavior. So, it's fun to see the different groups kind of respond. But I think for the most part, once people get through the initial, I got to put something on my face, what is this? I think most people get pretty excited about it.
Yeah. I think just the immersive nature of it, right? I think we do feel like, again, it's hard to replicate the true levels of stress you feel in the, you know, when you're encountering these situations. But we do hear from a lot of our trainees that, it gets their heart racing, right? They do, especially some of the scenarios we have, like you mentioned, they have to make split second decisions. And so if you don't react fast enough, it's a digital character, but they're still coming at you and attacking you, right? If you don't react fast enough. So I do think it does, you know, prepare them as much as possible for some of those, you know, really stressful situations that they encounter.
You know, at some point in your journey, you started with a pilot, you tested it out, and then there was a moment where you started scaling up. And now Axon's at just incredible scale with this technology. Was there a moment, either a story, an individual department, or a decision point where you thought, okay, this is working? Like we need to kind of turn the dial up on this.
You know, one of our early, I'll just again refer to like Joliet PD. They've been a really strong adopter of VR. Their deputy chief has been really bought in. And so just, you know, hearing that they're finding success, with these monthly deployments, we see they're a very high usage customer. Another example, actually, it points to an officer at Lincoln Police Department. It's a really powerful anecdote. They're, again, another big user of Axon VR, and they've bought into doing more frequent trainings at their departments. So every year, Axon has something called the Jack Cover Save of the Year Award. And Jack Cover is the NASA scientist that was the first inventor of the taser energy weapon technology. So every year, we award a police officer who has been able to de-escalate a situation with less lethal force. And the winner this year was this officer, Allie Winterbauer from Lincoln PD. And so the call that she went on was fairly standard, a mental health check. But, you know, what ended up happening was the subject ended up running at her and some of her partners with a large knife. And she was able to successfully deploy her T10. I think the subject was about, you know, 30, 35 feet away. So she deployed her taser energy weapon, successfully neutralized the threat. And they were able to bring the subject to a mental health facility and get him help. But it was really, what was really amazing about it was she ironically had just been in VR that morning before she had the call, and she had practiced her moving target drills. And, you know, I think maybe one misconception people have is like, it's not like officers are deploying their taser energy weapons all the time. Sometimes you can go months, maybe even a year without having to use it, right? So you, again, I think that's why frequent training is so important. And she basically said, you know, I had just done this drill in the morning of this call. And so I felt so much more prepared when this exact situation happened. And so that's a great testament of like, this is, well, you know, this is really working, right? You know, officers really feel like they are building the skills that they need to be successful. And that's, you know, that's saving lives. And that's what, you know, Axon is really trying to do with our technology.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, for us, you know, we've been in VR since 2016, really 2017. So, you know, 9-ish years. And it's this type of use case that got us excited. And what's cool is, I mean, you are, there's, like you said, it's not an exaggeration to say that you're saving lives. And to see that kind of powerful change in people, it's just really cool. It's cool to see what technology can do to really improve the quality of people's lives.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't get those types of anecdotes all the time, right? Because if our stuff is working, hopefully you never hear about bad situations. Yeah. But yeah, occasionally it's really powerful and motivating for our team when we hear about these types of use cases. Or, you know, I think sometime last year, one of our sales experts, you know, also has a great relationship with the customer, got a text, you know, from one of his customers at an agency that just said, you know, simply like, again, there's a lot of, I didn't realize that this was actually, something that officers encounter often because I don't have a law enforcement background myself, but it's really unfortunate. A lot of people who are suicidal, they will try to do something called suicide by cop, where they will charge at a police officer with a weapon, hoping that the police officer will shoot at them. Jeez. And so again, similar situation where our sales expert shared a text with me saying, you know, it was from a customer that said, you know, I had another suicide by cop incident earlier this morning, but I was well trained to handle it. And, you know, the VR really made a difference, right? So when we get these anecdotes, it really feels like, hopefully we are making a difference with this training, and we do feel like VR, you know, has a strong impact that it can make to really preparing officers better and leading to safer communities.
It's really incredible. And I kind of want to zoom out from so individual officers just having this amazing training, what an impact, to now, okay, you're at scale. Brad mentioned at the beginning of the call that probably one of the largest deployments of XR in the world right now. What are some of the lessons you've learned as you've gone to scale? I think a lot of organizations and companies, schools, universities, they start with a pilot. Maybe it feels easy because you can do stuff with 50 headsets or even 100 headsets. But once you get into the thousands, things change. What have you learned deploying at scale with many headsets across many departments and locations?
Yeah, I would say, and one thing to note is, you know, there's also a wide variety in different police agencies across the U.S. There's 17,000 police agencies. And so you have agencies that have 10 officers and you have agencies that have thousands of officers. So there's sort of scaling across many agencies as well as scaling across many officers within that agency, right? But I think in terms of how we scale, you know, it first starts with some level of executive buy-in, right? You need to have some champion at that agency. Sometimes it's a trainer, sometimes it's a deputy chief, or sometimes it's the chief themselves, right? They really believe that, you know, VR can help make an impact. And also, you know, giving them some sort of ROI to make them feel that they want to support, you know, deploying VR. So again, you mentioned earlier, Brad, like, yes, it's expensive to train with live cartridges. So doing high repetition, you know, there's an immediate ROI they get there, as well as, again, giving them some of the data on officers feel more confident, there's higher retention rates. So it really begins with getting some sort of champion, I think, at the agency. And then that person usually will, you know, work with their training teams to help, you know, deploy. To your point, oftentimes it starts with a few pilots. And then as they get the hang of it and they find it successful, they roll it out across their agency. And for large agencies, that can take 6 months or a year, right? Because they have so many officers that they need to train. So that's, I think, been helpful for us. I think also, you know, helping to alleviate some of the, you know, the pain points around VR. You know, it's still not simple to set up and use. So when agencies buy Axon VR, we do send out a professional services manager to help them, you know, get acquainted with the equipment, help them familiarize themselves with the content, help them also think about how to incorporate VR into their training programs. So having that network of professional services has been really helpful. Axon also, we run a lot of in-person training courses for a lot of our products. So we have a train the trainer model. We have, you know, there's the end officer themselves. There's usually a trainer. Some agencies have what they call sort of a master instructor or even like a senior master instructor. So we also run training certifications for those sort of higher level trainers. And as part of those certifications, we also educate them on VR as part of that so they can bring that knowledge back to their agency. So we sort of have a multi-pronged approach to help agencies really deploy and be successful with VR.
That's very cool. And again, I think sometimes people forget just the people part. You know, there's technical solutions, but because it is such a new technology, you got to put some boots on the ground, I think. And it seems like you've done that well. And then the result is that it just kind of goes, you know, there's some initial upfront investment. Maybe tell us a little bit, and our listeners, you know, are at anywhere from pilot to scale. And I think, or even just considering, I think people are very interested in some of the nuts and bolts even of how do you get, you know, that many devices set up and in the wild. And then, you know, what has your process been for content? You know, you've got a lot of use cases you talked about. So if there's anything you could share there, I think that would be very helpful for folks.
Yeah. Again, I think, you know, we're lucky because we're part of a larger company, right? So Axon, again, has a lot of resources in terms of customer support, the professional services. It really, you know, when an agency buys VR, a professional services manager is reaching out to them, giving them help to really just even like unbox the equipment, get the headsets connected to their Wi-Fi network. So they give them some pre-work to say, hey, before I come on site, you know, try to do these steps. And again, if they have problems, they can call into our customer support. We have more, we have sort of a, you know, frontline customer support team, but then we have more technical support staff who can help them if they have issues. You know, even simple things like making sure their IT whitelists some of our IP addresses so they can access some of our applications, right? So there's a lot of that setup work that happens that our professional services team does. And then when they go on site, they help them really learn how to navigate through our different types of content and you know, demo the content for them, show them how to use it, what are some of the different learning objectives of the different types of content that we have. And then from there, you know, we leave behind some resources as well for the agency. And then in addition to that professional services manager who's helping them with the that sort of first-time deployment, medium and larger size agencies also have a dedicated, you know, customer success manager. So again, if they continue to run into problems, they can reach out to that customer success manager, they can reach out to support. We're constantly releasing new things. So we are constantly putting out, you know, release notes to our customers, doing webinars to educate them on the latest content. We just did a webinar, you know, yesterday. We were trying to do those once a quarter because, again, it's not like we don't want to just give them a product and you know, we're constantly innovating, launching new features, launching new content. So there's also ongoing education to make them aware of all the new features that they have. But the other thing I've also learned is that, you know, this is not like a consumer product. It's like we build it and people start using it right away. You know, it's really, you know, they have training curriculums, right? And the larger the agency, the further in advance they set their training curriculums. It's a little bit like a teacher, right? A new textbook comes out and your teacher doesn't adopt it right away. You know, they need to learn what's new in that textbook, right? How is it teaching differently than the old version? And then when are they going to build it into their learning plan? So that same thing happens with our officers, especially again at larger agencies. Those curriculums get set, you know, far in advance. So we have to, you know, spend effort to educate them on the new content, help them figure out how they can incorporate it. So again, to your point, there's a lot of, you know, boots on the ground effort to help them really scale their deployments. But, you know, we're also investing in things like making it easier for them to, you know, hopefully manage their devices, right? Figure out which content is on which device. We're investing in some more capabilities to help, especially some of the larger agencies, you know, manage all their devices.
You said, thankfully, I think selling VR is more exciting than selling textbooks, but it's pretty easy to measure success with a textbook, right? You answer the questions at the end of the chapter. How do you measure success with VR?
Yeah, I think, you know, there are things like we can obviously see how much content is being used by that agency, share that back with the agency, right, just to show them sort of the adoption patterns. But right now, it is a little bit more, I would say, anecdotal, right? Sort of, again, some of these experiences that we hear from officers. We have a lot of voice of customer from mm-hmm. being able to talk to our agencies. We're constantly getting agencies to alpha and beta test. We have a CSAT that goes out every month to all of our different customers. So we obviously pay attention to the CSAT scores. Even something as simple as we put a little feedback QR code on the back of our headsets and have people, you know, fill out a survey based on their experience. So those are all the different things that we're doing to sort of get data on, you know, how customers are experiencing the product. But a lot of it is just talking to our trainers. Again, mm-hmm. I think we're really fortunate to have really strong relationships with our customers. And we engage with our trainers at a lot of these training events, at our annual Axon Week conference. And we hear a lot of feedback from them directly on, you know, their thoughts on the product, how we can improve, but also where they've seen success.
Yeah, that's great. Final question for you here as we move to a close. You've run the gamut from zero to true scale with some really powerful results. What is one piece of advice you would give someone who is at the very beginning of the journey?
Yeah, I would say, I think it goes back to your point, like, you know, it's just a technology and a medium, right? It's not one of these things where you build it and they will come. So I really think investing in all the processes and the mechanisms that mm-hmm. you have to, you know, put in the effort to drive like any sort of change management, right? I think that's the part, to your point, maybe people forget about or they don't see, you know, that how important that is to driving adoption. And it's resource intensive, but I think it's really critical to get that level of buy-in.
I know Brett said that was the last one, but I want a lightning round one, if that's okay, which is, as a pioneer in the space, like, where do you see the future of immersive training going?
Yeah, I'm really excited about the future. I really think that AI has a ton of potential to really transform how we do training. We're just experimenting with it right now. We actually have a product we've already announced that's launching soon. We call it verbal skills training. One of the pain points we heard from our agencies is that newer officers, right, they grew up texting. They don't always have the best verbal communication skills. And so, it's so important for officers to be able to build rapport, right, with their communities. And so, we're launching a new training where we're using AI to basically, have, you know, real time interactions with the trainee and the subject. So, there's different types of calls. The technology is, you know, it's pretty exciting. So essentially you go, there's a call, let's say, for somebody who is loitering in a parking garage, and your goal is to try to get that person to leave. We've been able to use AI to basically build out a real world conversation with that character. And we can also program the AI with different personalities. So you can, maybe for a new recruit, you start off with somebody who's more cooperative. You can also get a character who's more aggressive and combative, maybe, you know, swearing at the officer, not, you know, willing to comply or answer any of their questions. And when we've put some of our customers through that, I think they've been really excited about the potential. Because again, you know, the amount of complexity and variability they have to deal with, it's really hard to simulate that, right? But I think AI will give them, you know, that level of variation and open world experiences that will make the training even more effective. So that's something I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that is exciting. I think obviously it's just going to take the immersive training to the next level. So, T, this has been great. We really appreciate you taking some time, and we look forward to chatting again soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
I enjoyed the conversation.
Well, they hit my favorite, which is the accessibility and democratizing access. Just a really, really cool, powerful use case. I mean, they are the use case and the deployment, to me, poster child right now for XR.
I know you mentioned a little bit, but you know, when we started Arbor, we were talking about what's our mission, what are we doing with this new technology? It really was all about sort of an alternative vision for VR, which is not about, I have no issues with gaming or anything else, but like, let's find a use of this technology that actually makes an impact, that gives people their time back, that saves people money, that has, you know, and I think across the board, this is such a great use case. And she mentioned, I know you called it out, but just to mention it again, probably millions of dollars saved on taser cartridges. And for a police officer who maybe only has, I don't know, three or four attempts at, you know, discharging their taser in real life, they can do it 1,000 times in VR until they're highly proficient. And I know it's like muscle memory. And I think we hear that over and over again, that particularly for things that require that muscle memory to develop, and not everybody has this, but Axon's leading the way in that they have a peripheral, they have the external, the actual, you know, 3D model of the taser that you're able to see in VR. You're able to use that, you know, the physicality of it and everything, pull the trigger. That to me is game changer. And I hope more companies, I don't know, whether it's oil and gas or airlines or whatever, if you could start to incorporate those kinds of, I mean, what do you call them? I guess controllers, but like controller with a haptic feedback, and that to me takes to the next level. So yeah, great use case, great interview. Hope to chat with her again soon.
Yeah, that's great. And as always, we appreciate you taking some time to spend with us, and make sure you check us out wherever you listen to podcasts, and we'll see you next time.